content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and from the Harvard Health Letter and Heart Letter. And in fact, the first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the June issue. The article is entitled, When Pain Slows Your New Walking Regimen. You've laced up your sneakers for the first time in months and you're ready to get fit. But pain creeps into the routine soon after you start it. Don't chalk it up to being out of shape. Get to know some of the aches that can occur, potential causes, and what you can do about them to keep walking. The first is heel pain. Two conditions commonly cause heel pain. One is plantar fasciitis, an overstretching of the band of tissue that supports the arch of the foot. Tiny tears often occur where the fascia meets the heel bone. The other condition that can cause heel pain is a heel spur, a small growth of the heel bone that can irritate the plantar fascia. What you can do. Cortisone injections can ease the pain of bone spurs. For plantar fasciitis, if it hurts in the morning, massage the bottom of the foot near the heel before getting out of bed. Then get up, stretch the calf muscles. Cold packs or shoe inserts for heel pain can also help, said physical therapist Claire Saffron Norton, clinical supervisor of rehabilitation services at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Blisters. One tiny blister on your foot can cause a lot of pain. The blisters you get from walking are typically caused by friction, maybe because you have a bunion. You're not wearing socks, you walked on uneven terrain, or your shoes are too loose and don't hold your feet firmly. What you can do. Don't pop a blister. That can lead to infection that's hard to heal. Wait a few days for the blister to drain. Cover it with a bandage if you have to, and new skin to appear. When it's healed, wear socks and sneakers with a snug fit. Calf pain. Pain that shows up in the lower calf on one or both sides may actually come from nerves compressed in a narrowed spinal canal. The condition is called spinal stenosis, which may develop with age-related changes in bone and other spinal tissue. Spinal stenosis pain is often worse at the end of the day. Pressure eases when you lie down during the night or take a break sitting, so you might feel better with a morning walk than an evening walk, Saffron Norton says. Take breaks during a walk if you experience pain, but once you're rested, it's okay to keep going. Shin pain. Shin splints, or pain in the front or inner part of the lower leg, can result from walking too fast and straining your muscles. Shin splints can also happen when arches in the feet are too flat or too high, making you work harder trying to lift the foot. The solution is to slow down. Give your muscles a week to get used to walking before you put lots of demands on them with a brisk pace. If you suspect a flat or high foot arch is to blame, try an orthotic shoe insert or buy supportive shoes at a store specializing in walking shoes or sneakers. All over leg pain. Two conditions can cause pain throughout the legs. One is neuropathy, a painful tingling that stretches all the way up the leg. Neuropathy can have many causes, but the one that might manifest on your walk could be compressed nerves in the spine from spinal discs that have collapsed. Another all-over leg pain can come from peripheral artery disease, narrowing of the leg arteries due to plaque buildup that reduces the supply of oxygen to your leg muscles. The main symptoms of PAD are cramping pain in the calves, although the pain can also occur in your thighs, hips, or buttocks. With PAD, unlike neuropathy, the discomfort occurs with activity and goes away within 2 minutes when the activity stops. Both PAD and neuropathy respond well to continued walking, which helps improve blood flow to the legs. Start with a short walk and increase the walking time gradually. If you think you have PAD, talk to your doctor. People with PAD often also have heart disease, and your doctor may want to check that out. For neuropathy from DDD, your doctor may prescribe a medication to treat nerve pain, like Neurontin. Surgery may be considered if the symptoms are severe or persistent. The next article comes from UCLA Health, and is entitled Common Heart Tests. In broad terms, the heart mainly consists of a plumbing system and an electrical system. There are two pumps. One uses arteries to push oxygenated blood from the heart to the rest of the body. The other pump uses veins to usher blood back to the heart and into the lungs to get reoxygenated. Your pulse, or heartbeat, is controlled by the heart's electrical system. These systems can be measured with various tests to check for abnormalities. Given that heart disease claims more lives than all forms of cancer combined, it might seem logical to get all the common heart tests possible as a preventive measure, but that's not what experts recommend. There is no bundle of tests that are right for everyone, explains cardiologist Dina Goldwater, MD, PhD, Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center. The tests ordered depend upon the patient's symptoms. Symptoms and common heart tests. Unexplained chest pain, shortness of breath, and irregular heartbeat are a few of the symptoms that would indicate the need for a specific heart test. The first test is an electrocardiogram. This test checks the heart's electrical system and heart rhythm. It shows how fast the heart is beating and whether its rhythm is steady or irregular. An EKG can show if the heart has been damaged by a previous heart attack. If there is a heart rhythm disturbance, an enlarged heart, or a valve problem. For this painless test, several adhesive electrodes are attached to a patient's chest, upper arms, and legs, and all that is connected to a machine. The heart's electrical data are recorded on a graph, which shows electrical signals passing through the heart. Stress tests. The most common type of stress test involves walking on a treadmill or riding a stationary bike with EKG electrodes attached to the patient during the activity. The test is used to assess how healthy the heart is for exercise. It's especially useful after a heart attack or after a long period of being sedentary. A stress test can also help determine the cause of chest pain, because chest discomfort from coronary artery disease is usually triggered by exertion. Some heart patients may be asked to repeat stress tests to assess whether medications are working, or if coronary artery disease is getting worse or better. Echocardiogram. This test is typically ordered when a doctor suspects there may be a problem with heart valves or heart chambers. An echocardiogram uses high-frequency ultrasound. A computer translates the ultrasound into a moving image on a monitor. To conduct the test, the technician spreads cool gel on a patient's chest and gently presses a device against the skin, painlessly sending the ultrasound beam to the heart. The tests reveal the shape, size, position, and motion of cardiac structures, including the thickness of ventricle walls, the condition of heart valves, or the presence of abnormal openings between the chambers of the heart. This test can also be combined with a technology known as Doppler echocardiogram, which reveals how blood flows through the chambers and valves of the heart. It is a useful test when blood flow problems are suspected. Coronary angiogram. This invasive test requires a thin, flexible tube is inserted into a blood vessel in the groin, the elbow, or the wrist. The tube is directed to the coronary arteries. A contrast dye is used with an X-ray picture to detect blockages due to plaque. The test is typically for patients who have stable or unstable angina. Of course, angina is chest pain caused by decreased blood supply to the heart, or for patients who have had a heart attack and their condition is not getting better. It's also for patients who are suspected to have coronary artery disease, but non-invasive tests haven't detected it. Risk assessments and preventing coronary artery disease. A lipid profile is a blood test that reveals how much cholesterol is in the blood. The body needs some cholesterol, but if it's too high, there's a risk for developing coronary artery disease. Lowering cholesterol and heart attack risk from it can often be achieved through lifestyle change, like losing weight, quitting smoking, exercising, and eating a heart-healthy diet. Understanding your risk for a first-time cardiovascular event like a heart attack or stroke is important. Dr. Goldwater recommends seeing your physician to calculate your 10-year and lifetime risk. The result of this screening test can inform recommendations on lifestyle modification or medications. Now we're going to turn to the Harvard Heart Letter of June 2021 to an article called, "Are You Wasting Money on Supplements?" One of the top reasons people take supplements is the promise of better heart health. But for the most part, it's an empty promise. If your daily routine involves swallowing a multiple vitamin, fish oil capsule, or other dietary supplement, you're far from alone. At least half of Americans say they take supplements, and multiple vitamins are the most popular by a long shot. Longtime Heart Letter subscribers may recall our coverage about the dearth of evidence that vitamin and mineral supplements can prevent cardiovascular disease, even in people who have poor diet. Earlier this year, the Journal of the American College of Cardiology published a series of reviews about nutritional supplements in the heart. The take-home message on multivitamins gleaned from 22 trials comparing multiple vitamins to placebo remains the same. Multiple vitamin supplements do not lower the risk of heart attack, stroke, or death. Getting your vitamins and minerals from a healthy plant-based diet makes more sense. There are people with uncommon conditions that prevent normal nutrient absorption who do need those supplements, however. What about other supplements, like omega-3 fatty acids, commonly referred to as fish oil, red yeast rice, and coenzyme Q10, all of which were featured in the JACC review? We asked Dr. Pieter Cohen, an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, who studies supplements, for his perspective. The first supplement discussed is omega-3 fatty acids. After vitamins and minerals, fish oil is the second most common supplement, taken by an estimated 19 million people in the United States. These amber capsules contain the omega-3 fatty acids DHA and EPA, which may ease inflammation, prevent blood clots, and possibly forestall dangerous heart rhythms. Over the past two decades, numerous trials have pitted omega-3 supplements against placebos. The verdict? There are no convincing data to suggest that omega-3 supplements can prevent a first heart attack in at-risk people, Dr. Cohen says. Like all supplements, EPA and DHA supplements are not FDA regulated, and some contain unhealthy saturated or oxidized fats, industrial pollutants, or mercury. Bottom line, if you have heart disease, you're better off asking your doctor about the prescription drug icosapent ethyl, which is also called Vascepta, a high-dose purified EPA preparation that lowers cardiovascular risk when taken with a statin. If you don't have heart disease, eating 2 servings of fatty fish weekly or following a healthy vegetarian diet rich in nuts, legumes, and healthy oils makes more sense than spending money on over-the-counter fish oil supplements. Next discussed is red yeast rice. Red yeast rice is made by steaming white rice with the yeast Monascus purpureus. The resulting red-hued extract contains monacillin K, the same active ingredient in the prescription cholesterol-lowering drug lovastatin. A number of clinical trials show that supplements containing 4 milligrams to 10 milligrams of monacillin K can lower cholesterol. But here's the catch. Most brands contain 600 milligrams of red yeast rice, and the label usually suggests that people take 2 capsules twice a day. But there's no way to know how much monacillin K each capsule contains. By law, if a manufacturer lists the amount of active ingredient on the label, the product can't be marketed as a supplement, but instead must be sold as a drug. If you buy one of these supplements, it would be like buying a beer and having to guess how much alcohol it contains, since the amount of alcohol in different beers can range from 3.2% to more than 8%. Dr. Cohen's earlier research found highly variable amounts of monacillin K in 28 different brands of red yeast rice. Another study revealed a potentially toxic contaminant called citrinin in 1/3 of the tested products, although many currently marketed products claim to be citrinin-free. The monthly cost of red yeast rice supplements runs about $20, whereas most low to moderate dose generic statins cost $5 to $10 a month. So the bottom line is, if you need to reduce your cholesterol, a generic statin is more reliable, less expensive, and probably safer than red yeast rice. Next is coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is a vitamin-like substance made naturally by the body that is essential for energy production within muscle cells. Some cardiologists recommend this supplement to treat or prevent muscle aches linked to statin use. About 10% of people who take statins report muscle aches. But the true incidence of this problem is unclear, as muscle aches are common in older people and have other possible causes. Statins work by blocking the production of a substance that the liver uses to make cholesterol. That substance is called mevalonic acid. But the body also uses mevalonic acid to make coenzyme Q10, which means the lower CoQ10 level could be an unintended consequence of taking statins. Taking CoQ10 regularly can boost levels in the blood, but it's unclear if that reflects the amount in muscle tissue. A dozen clinical trials have compared coenzyme Q10 to placebo in people with muscle symptoms while taking statins, but the results have been mixed. Some show a benefit while others do not. One encouraging thing about this supplement is that it appears to be quite safe, says Dr. Cohen. So what's the bottom line? If you have muscle aches after starting a statin, work with your doctor to confirm the statin is to blame. Stop the drug for one or two months, then resume taking it. If your symptoms recede and then recur, options include taking a lower statin dose, taking it less often, or trying a different statin. You could also try taking 200 to 400 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 daily to see if that helps. It's inexpensive, about $6 to $8 per month, although there's no reason to take it if it doesn't help you to feel better. Continuing with the Harvard Heart Letter, next is Ask the Doctor with Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, MD, MPH, Editor-in-Chief. Anxiety, cause or effect of a racing heart. The question for Dr. Bhatt: since I was a teenager, I've had occasional episodes where my heart will suddenly start beating very fast, often out of the blue. It seems to be happening more frequently now that I'm older. Doctors have always brushed it off as anxiety or a panic attack, but could there be something actually wrong with my heart? Sometimes I feel a little lightheaded if it lasts more than a few minutes. If anything, I feel like the episodes are causing anxiety rather than the other way around. Dr. Bhatt replies, some of the classic symptoms of a panic attack, a racing heart coupled with feeling breathless and dizzy, overlap with a condition known as supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT. This condition occurs when faulty electric signals in the heart override the heart's normal pacemaker, triggering a series of fast heartbeats. During a bout of SVT, the heart rate can soar as high as 250 beats or more per minute. A normal heart rate is between 60 and 100. When this happens, the heart's lower pumping chambers don't have time to fill up completely between beats. The brain and body may therefore receive less blood than normal, which is why people may become lightheaded. Other symptoms that can occur with both SVT and a panic attack include sweating, a choking sensation, and chest pain. But during a panic attack, people may also experience a feeling of impending doom or loss of control. Panic attacks and SVT both tend to be more common in women than in men. Electrophysiologists, cardiologists who specialize in heart rhythm disorders, will tell you that in young women, SVT is commonly misdiagnosed as anxiety or panic disorder, but it's seen in people of all ages. Here's the problem. Because SVT happens sporadically, it can be difficult to diagnose. An electrocardiogram done in the doctor's office records the heart's electrical activity for just a few seconds. So people usually have to wear a portable EKG machine called an event or a loop monitor for up to a month. You press a button to activate the recording whenever you notice your heart racing. A more convenient option that's become more widely available is a single waterproof patch that resembles a large Band-Aid. Place on your chest, it can record your heart's activity for up to 30 days. For even less frequent episodes, another option is an implantable loop recorder, which is placed by a cardiologist just under the skin of the chest to the left of the breastbone. It can be programmed to capture a high heart rate, or you can activate the recording by pressing a button on a small wand held over the device. However, this more invasive option is usually reserved for people with more serious symptoms like fainting. Now we're going to turn to a section of the Harvard Heart Letter called Research We're Watching. The first article is entitled A Longevity Formula, 3 Vegetables Plus 2 Fruits a Day. New research upholds the longstanding advice to eat 5 fruits and vegetables a day. Published online March 2021 by the journal Circulation, the study pooled diet and mortality data from more than 2 million people who were followed for 30 years. People who ate 2 servings of fruit and 3 servings of vegetables daily had a 12% lower risk of dying of cardiovascular disease compared with people who ate just 2 fruit or vegetable servings daily. Fruits and vegetables are good sources of potassium, high intakes of which are linked to lower blood pressure. They also contain fiber and compounds called polyphenols, which may discourage dangerous plaque buildup and blood clots. But starchy vegetables like potatoes and corn don't offer longevity benefits, nor do fruit juices. Healthier choices include leafy greens, carrots, berries, and citrus fruits. Next, alternatives to warfarin may be safer, more effective for atrial fib. Over the past decade, drugs called direct oral anticoagulants have been slowly replacing warfarin for preventing dangerous blood clots in people with certain conditions. A new study suggests that for people with some types of valvular atrial fibrillation not involving mechanical heart valves, these direct oral anticoagulants may be safer and more effective than warfarin. Warfarin works well for some people, but requires frequent monitoring and interacts with many foods and other medications. The study included more than 56,000 people with atrial fib and a heart valve disorder. All were prescribed warfarin or apixaban, dabigatran, and Xarelto, or rivaroxaban. The other drugs are called Eliquis and Pradaxa. Compared with warfarin users, those who took the oral anticoagulants were less likely to experience a stroke or a clot somewhere else in the body. Anticoagulant users were also less likely to experience serious bleeding, a common side effect of warfarin. The study was published on March 29, 2021, Annals of Internal Medicine. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.